I'm fantasy author L. Penelope, and welcome to My Imaginary Friends, a look behind the scenes of an author mapping the worlds in my head and making them a reality. Hello, friends. Today is Sunday, August 25th, 2019, and this is episode 29 of My Imaginary Friends. I'm Leslie. So, you survived another week. My husband will get that reference if he's listening. There's some podcast that he listens to that starts that way, and I can't even know, I don't know the name of it, and I wouldn't recommend it if I did, but we've survived another week is how I feel right now. Yeah, it's been a week. So this week's best thing is my writer community, my friends, specifically my mastermind, which really helped me this week and helped me start digging out of a hole that I've been in. And just to have people who are there and can sort of understand what you're going through and know you well enough to like know your kind of quirks and specific things too, and then kind of talk you off ledges. So that is super helpful. And so my homies, Sarisa Rennie Murphy and Nikisha, aka Inez Johnson, I never know what to call people when they have pen names. She doesn't keep it like a super secret, but she also has a couple of other pen names, so I'm not gonna out all of them, but yeah, like, I think starting that mastermind group was one of the best things I ever did. One of my best ideas ever. and because I had been, I'd been doing research on other like online business type things. And mastermind is, you know, is a thing that happens in a lot of different types of businesses. And I thought it would be cool to start one. And so, originally there were three members. It was me and Nikisha and another art writer, and then she eventually left to go and pursue other things. And I've known Nikisha since freshman year of college. Like, I guess it was pre-orientation or something like that. Whenever the week before classes started, and we were both in the honors program in the School of Communications at Howard University, HU. And so I've known her for a million years. And then I met Cerise more recently, but as soon as I met her, she had such like beautiful, positive energy. And I was just like, I really need to be around her more. And so I think this was after the other woman left. And I was like, I think we need three people. And I was like, I think that she would just be a good addition just because her energy is so just bright and shiny. And it ended up working out. And I'm so, so grateful to them to be able to talk to them every week about stuff that's happening and, you know, work through our business problems or plot problems or whatever it is that we need that week. This week, they are both away, and I am going to miss them very much because, you know, sometimes summertime is difficult and family and, you know, trips and conferences and whatever. So, but that they are definitely getting the shout out for this week's best thing because, it's been difficult. Like this week, so I'd gotten over the cold that I had, but I was having some digestive issues and I was just feeling bad in general. And, not making as much progress as I want on anything, really. And then I had a panic attack, which I haven't had a panic attack in over 15 years. It's never really common for me, but it's been such a long time. And so I was just really in a place where I had to kind of regroup and like figure out, all right, what's happening? Why am I feeling this way? And I know there's a lot of things. There's kind of a long-term ongoing work project. There's books. I can't climb still. Like, I'm not really wearing my wrist splint anymore, but my wrist is not healing as fast as I want it to. And so, one of my favorite things that I love to do, I haven't been able to do for 2 months. And it's like one of my main forms of exercise. And with my wrists, I can still do a lot of other kinds of exercises that I don't enjoy, which is kind of a problem. So, I'm not doing as much as I'm not doing like what I should be doing exercise wise. I know just because I can't do the one thing I really want to do. So a lot of things just sort of piling on at the same time. And so Lainey Taylor, who was the author of one of my favorite books, which is Daughter of Smoke and Bone, had a video on her Instagram stories. And it doesn't seem to be on highlights, so at this point, there's no way to really watch it. I actually recorded it on my phone, but I don't think that it's like ethical for me to share that because it was on her stories. But it was really wonderful. And she's such a beautiful writer. If you haven't read Daughter of Smoke and Bone, then I highly recommend it. The rest of the series, it's kind of like the Matrix for me. Like, I love the first one, and the other ones, I actually didn't ever read the third book in that series because the second one was kind of traumatic. Like, it's one of those books that I gave 5 stars because it's so gorgeous, but I can't ever read it again, and I don't even want to think about it. So even though Daughter of Smoke and Bone, I think, ends on a cliffhanger, you kind of have to headcanon, like, your ending for that, and at least for me, I mean. Anyway, that is beside the point. Definitely, I love that first book. And so she had in her stories about just talking about lack of joy in the writing process. And she's working on her 10th book, I think she said, 9th or 10th book. And the last few, she's just been struggling to keep up and to maintain that joy that she had in the beginning. And some of it was deadlines, some of it was perfectionism. And these are things that I completely relate to. And so she was actively trying to find a way around this. And so she decided to journal the process, which I actually have done. I started journaling about the process of writing when I was writing Whispers of Shadow and Flame the first time around. And it nearly broke me. Like, that book was so hard to write. And maybe I should just go back and read those journals, because I was like, if I can document this process, then maybe I can figure my way through it. And eventually I did. But so yeah, journaling and also trying to find quotations and inspiration in other places. And she mentioned Elizabeth Gilbert's Big Magic, which I have on audiobook. I started to listen to it. It had a lot of good stuff in it. I just never got around to finishing it. And also Ray Bradbury's Zen and the Art of Writing, which I don't think I have. I have another Ray Bradbury book on writing that I haven't actually read yet. What are these books behind me? A lot of them I have read, but some of them are just, they're in my TBR. They're just mixed in together. So I'm going to buy Zen and the Art of Writing because she recommended it a lot. And apparently it's just essays and things about writing and joy. And so one of the quotes that she read from Ray Bradbury, which is, this is paraphrasing, but if you're writing without zest or gusto or fun or love, you're only half a writer. And it's interesting because I've felt this before, like this, you know, the sense of the lack of joy. And there's sort of competing ideas about this. Like, on one hand, you have this idea that you need to have this joy and zest and gusto. I love those words. Because that's part of creativity. And on the other hand, you've got I call it a Stephen Pressfield approach, which is going pro. You just have to sit down every day and do the work. And I think that's a Stephen King kind of thing too. And I'm not sure that Ray Bradbury is even contradicting this. Like, I think you do, in order to find the joy again. You know, I think Lainey Taylor is actively sitting down and doing the work. But there's a school of thought wherein it doesn't require joy. It doesn't, you know, there's no such thing as writer's block because there's no such thing as plumber's block or, you know, like doctor's block. Like, they have to go in, they do their jobs, and they leave. And that can be inspiring at a certain point, you know, but like, it's not the same thing, I don't think. I don't think that, you know, being a plumber or even a web developer, like, I don't have creative blocks when I'm coding necessarily. You go in, you do a thing, and then you leave. It doesn't, even though a lot of jobs do require creativity, like, I do think coding requires creativity. I don't know anything about plumbing, but I think that, like, other jobs that aren't completely considered creative, you know, problem solving is creativity. So maybe plumbing does. Like, maybe if you are like, re-piping a house, it's going to get very, I'm going to show my ignorance very quickly. You know, there's multiple ways to do that, and you have to figure out how to solve problems and how to pipe around studs. I don't know, you know, whatever. So, like, there is problem solving, and problem solving is a creative endeavor, but it is different than painting and writing and dancing, I think, because those are 100% creative. They're, as opposed to a percentage of these other things are creative, wherein the rest of it is just doing the job, just doing the thing that needs to be doing, just fixing the thing, or, you know. At the end of the day, writing is fixing, you know, but it has to come from another place. So that idea, it's like there's some merit to it, but sometimes the merit runs out. And so, yeah, like whether you have to, because the downside of the other side of thought, like that you have to have this joy is, well, if you don't have the joy, can you still do the work? And you can, you know, if you're a professional, you have to. You can't wait for the joy to arrive. You can't wait for the bolt of inspiration. You do have to sit down and do the work at the end of the day. But when you're doing it over and over again without the joy, then it becomes like anything else and you suffer. Maybe your work might not suffer, you know, like I think that there is a feeling like there's good days of writing when you feel like the muse is singing to you. And then there's the bad days and you're just doing the work. And when you read the book, you have no idea which days were which chapters came from the good days and which chapters came from the bad days. So, you know, that's one on the side of professionalism. If you sit down and do it, the book will come out and it will come out of you and it's the same place, but the feeling is different. So when you sit down again the next time, you know, Lainey Taylor talked about having almost a trauma response to sitting down at the writing desk, where if it's bad and if it's bad and it's bad and you sit down and those are the things that are in your mind. And so you get into these patterns, which can be dangerous for yourself as a creative person who needs the inspiration to fuel you, you know, as much as you need the food and water and exercise and the other Maslow's hierarchy of needs, shelter and clothing, there's something else that fuels you creatively. And if we want to call that joy or zest or gusto, that needs to be refilled. And, you know, you talk about refilling the well, but in terms of going out and consuming things to inspire you. And I think this is slightly different than inspiration. You know, I think inspiration is a little bit different. This is more, whether it's, is it fatigue? I don't know. But yeah, joy and inspiration are closely related, but I don't think that they're the same. And I think that burnout comes from continually doing the work without the fuel of joy. And so, yeah, I think we have to be very careful and very active in cultivating that. And so I like, you know, what she was talking about, journaling, about the process, and finding, you know, other writers and other creatives who have, who've gone through this and who've got advice to give. And I will really be thinking about that and focusing on doing that more and trying to bring more gusto into my work. So I did start a Facebook group, and I'm going to be doing a read-along of Song of Blood and Stone and Breath of Dust and Dawn, which is the first novella, in preparation for the release of Book 2, Whispers of Shadow and Flame, on October 1st. And so it starts September 1st, and I will be doing like behind-the-scenes stuff on every week, like putting a post up about, you know, the chapters. Like I posted a schedule of the read-along. And so we'll see how that goes. It's an experiment, and I don't know. I don't know. I think it's hard to get people engaged. And so, yeah, it's definitely an experiment, and I'll see how. I wanted to start a Facebook group, and then I kind of put it off, and I've been back and forth on it. And we will see how it works. I'm still a little bit on the fence about it, but I decided to go and pull the trigger and at least try and try to go in there every day-ish. Well, I think if more people join, there'll be more engagement, but so far it's been really slow. And I think it's always, that's what I'm saying, like trying to get people to, I don't know. There was a podcast, The Writer's Well, talked about this, I think last week, how sometimes they've tried, well, there's two writers who host that, and they've tried different sort of like reader engagement things, and some readers just want to read and they don't want to engage with you. And that is totally fine. Like, I get it. And some readers really do. So I think it's just about trying to find the ones that do and seeing what, like, okay, thinking about what is the point of it is just to, I'm in other reader groups for authors that I really like, and I don't spend a lot of time in them. I kind of just peek in and out, but it can be cool. Like, you know, if you're getting information about when things are launching or behind the scenes stuff, like I think it has some value. So, yeah, that is my experiment. And if you'd like to join it, I'll link to my Facebook group and the read along, and I will keep you posted on how it goes. In other news, oh, a follow-up from last week when I was talking about Jamila Woods and her album, or the song Giovanni on the album Legacy, Legacy. Sorry. There's also a song on there called Octavia, about Octavia Butler, or inspired by Octavia Butler, and which I probably should have talked about too, considering it has the words that are my tattoo. I have a tattoo, "So be it, see to it," which are words from Octavia Butler that are in a journal that's it was a very inspiring journal, and I'll link to that again. But that song is actually really good too. I mean, the whole album is amazing, and it just, for some reason, last week it was Giovanni, but I was like, oh, I should have talked about Octavia because it's also very relevant to me personally. So that was just a note. I forget a lot of things. So this week, also finished watching season three of Dear White People on Netflix, which was interesting. The first season I really liked. I didn't love the movie Dear White People that much. I mean, it was cool, but the TV show, it took a couple episodes to kind of get into it and figure out what he was doing, what the creator was doing with it. And once I did, I was like, oh, I like this. I really like this. The way the story was told, you know, you saw different characters were sort of the POV character for each episode. And so you were seeing the same events from different perspectives. And it was really nicely done. And he has a unique, clear visual style, you know, sort of like Wes Anderson, not quite as like polarizing necessarily, or as specific as Wes Anderson. I love Wes Anderson, but yeah, just like a specific visual style and an aesthetic, and I really liked it. Season two, okay, no, I was like, all right. Season three, everything is different, and I still don't know how I feel about it. He changed it purposefully and like mindfully, but I would like to. I'm interested to see if they're going to get a season four. At the end of the day, I think it's still worth watching. I highly recommend season one, and then I think you'll want to continue with these characters for two and three. But yeah, three is interesting. Oh, and I had the Popeyes fried chicken sandwich that everyone is talking about. So my husband went, on his day off to Popeyes. And he calls me and he's like, okay, I've got it made it sound like he had the sandwiches. And then like 40 minutes later, I was like, did you get them? And he was like, oh no, I've been in line. I was like, oh, he just pulled up when he called me the first time. So yes, got the chicken sandwich. He got the spicy one. I got the non-spicy because I don't really do spicy. And yeah, it's a good sandwich. It's a quality sandwich. I don't think I've actually ever had the Chick-fil-A chicken sandwich to compare it to. Usually when I go to Chick-fil-A, I get chicken tenders instead of sandwiches. I don't like order chicken. Well, anyway, Burger King is my favorite chicken sandwich. And even though the Popeye sandwich is a lot bigger and as is very good, I'm still gonna stand the Burger King. Burger King has totally gotten left out of this conversation because it's not like a chicken breast, it's like a pressed patty of chicken, but I still like it. So yeah, I was participated in the zeitgeist that is currently happening and can recommend. I don't recommend being in line for 30 minutes to an hour. Like some people are in line for hours to get that sandwich. Like, no. Next month, I think the fervor will have died down and the poor Popeyes employees will be able to go to work without, I wonder if they're having panic attacks. Like that seems like I've never had to work in the service industry. I don't think I have the personality for it, but I feel for them. And yeah, wait. If there's a line that's like going a mile away, it's not worth that. But just to say that you did, I guess, you know, participate in it. So yes, writing news. I got something like I only got like 3,000 words this week because by Wednesday I realized I didn't know what I needed to write that day, and it didn't really get much better from there. So yeah, regrouping again. I don't want to belabor it because it's obviously a sore spot. The book will get done at some point. Also on my mind, so I'm working on book 4 of the Ursinger Chronicles, and I had turned in book 3, I think in May, and so I am going to get edits at some point on book 3, and I don't know when. And so I know that when I get those edits, I'm going to have to stop working on book 4 to, you know, work on the revisions for book 3 that my editor wants. And not having as much progress on book 4 as I would want before, whenever that point is, I'm going to have to stop, is also like weighing on me. But yeah, that's kind of just how it goes sometimes. I don't have a lot else to say about that. Like, I have to deal with that when it comes and just keep moving forward in the meantime as much as I can. So I do have a plan. Oh yeah. Backstory and character stuff, character goals and motivations for these other characters. Because yeah, I have to dig deeper on everyone, and it's just a lot of characters, and it's a lot of threads and a lot of things happening that I have to know. And I feel like I was trying to write with what I knew, and then I don't know what I was trying to do. I should go back and listen to what I was trying to do. This is why I'm recording it on this podcast. But whatever it was, it wasn't quite working. Like, I thought I knew enough to at least move forward. And in the past, I think I would have known enough to move forward. But for this, for whatever reason, because this is the end and because there are a lot more threads that I have to weave, I think I do just have to have a much more detailed plan instead of, you know, a normal 7-10 page outline. I might need a longer one. I might need a Dorinda Jones style outline before I'm able to wrap my head around everything and feel confident that I know enough to proceed. So that's what I'm going to be focusing on, and not so much the words, because writing the words, at least for this book, is not, I don't think it's going to be the problem. It's never really the problem. But what happens and detailing how everything fits together is sort of the stage where I'm stuck at now. And not even stuck, but it's just, because I don't think I'm stuck. I think when I sit down and think about it and work it out, I get it. I just was trying to write before doing that, and that was not the best idea. Also, I did end up, I finished the entire A Court of Thorn and Roses series. I had a lukewarm reaction to the first book, but I ended up really liking the second and third ones. And yeah, I just binge read them all. I was sobbing through everything. It was super emotional. Like, she really pulls those emotional strings. And then I also read, there's a novella at the end that kind of bridges into, I guess, what are going to be the spin-off novels or the continuation of the series, however that's going to happen. But yeah, I ended up enjoying it. I might do a spoiler thing at the end of this, because I feel like I have something to say about it. And I think we are at the end. So, all right, if you don't want any spoilers for the A Court of Thorn and Roses entire series, then sign off now and you will save yourself. And have a wonderful week, and I'll talk to you next week. If you don't mind spoilers, then here are my thoughts. So, the first book, it's kind of a Beauty and the Beast story, and, you know, you're thinking it's going to be the normal thing that you've read before. Our heroine, Farah, is taken to the land of the Fae by Tamlin, who's a High Lord of the Spring Court. And we have a Beauty and the Beast story, and she falls in love with them, and she sacrifices everything, like, kind of her soul almost, in order to save him. She has to kill innocents, and she just goes through a lot. And they end up together. And then all through, you've got this third character of Rhysand, who is ostensibly a bad guy, but everything he does is kind of good. And he's the foil of Tamlin. And in book 2, you see the trauma, that, like, literal PTSD that Farah and Tamlin have gone through with this whole experience. And then he ends up being, I guess, emotionally abusive. I'm not sure. Some kind of abusive, where he's so afraid of losing her again and her so concerned about her safety that he ends up locking her in the house, essentially, like kind of making her a prisoner. And but they have terrible communication and they're both suffering from PTSD and they're not talking to each other about it or supporting each other really through it. And he's, you know, jerkish. So, you know, Reese comes and swoops in and takes her away. And then they find out that they're truly mates. And in order to get her back from him, because Tamlin still believes Reese is the bad guy, he allies with the enemy and, but secretly was always going to work against the enemy. I mean, there's so many like twists and turns and changing alliances, and you don't know a lot of people. You think they're with this person and they're really working for the good guys. And I mean, it was all a lot more action and very, you know, kept me very interested in these characters. But like that kind of bait and switch, I appreciated that she was trying to tell the story of abusers and how it starts out looking good, but there's red flags and then it turns and the person you thought was the prince can really not be, but people are complicated. And the, you know, just reading through like reviews and hot takes, I don't know what you call them, about people who don't think Tamlin should have been villainized the way he was and Reese isn't really that great and all these just reactions from fans. I mean, she set out to tell a really complicated story, which is great, and she did. You know, like all of the characters, you know, have to face the things that they did to survive and the things that they're willing to do. And amidst a fantasy, which is still a tale of good and evil, there are still a few characters who are completely bad. There's nobody that I can think of that is completely good. But yeah, the bait and switch, though, I feel like you think you're going into a normal, like, fantasy romance story that is going to have a happy ending, and it's not what you expect, which just makes it really interesting. So yeah, I did end up enjoying it, even though it's not what I thought it was going to be, which is part of the appeal. And Sarah J. Maas has an amazing ability to just kind of reel you in and tug on those heartstrings and make things really, really bad. Nesta, I am too through with as of this novella. I don't understand. Like, I get trauma and guilt, but like, she was ready to die for Cassian. And afterwards, I mean, yes, her father was killed in front of her, and that is horrific. But like, I don't get where she is now. I don't like it at all. I might not read the rest of them. Like, I read the little, at the end of the novella, there's a, you know, preview of the next book, and I never liked Nesta. I liked that she was fierce. I like that she had this character who's just, like, even as a mortal, so fierce and, like, but I don't like her. And I like Cassian. And I don't want him to end up with her, because I think she's awful. So, those are my thoughts. Those are my spoilery thoughts about A Court of Thorn and Roses. Don't at me. Yeah, so thanks again, and I will talk to you later. Have a great week. Happy readings. For episode show notes and to learn more about me and my books, go to lpenelope.com. Subscribe to My Imaginary Friends wherever you get your podcasts, and check out the video episodes on YouTube. And please leave a rating and review to help support the show.